Speaker's downstairs, by the way.
He is? Okay.
He's coming up.
Good, Rabbi Sai. So, we move on. This week is Rosh Chodesh, I mean, it's Shem on Thursday. And on Thursday was the day when the Bnei Yisrael started travelling towards Yerushalayim in order to be Oile Regel. We said that the most distant place from where somebody had a chiyuv to go to Yerushalayim was 2 weeks away, a 2 week journey, and that's why we said Parshas Parah was a week earlier so that people could be mitar themselves and have a 2 week journey. So the Gemara says in Bava Kamma, Daf Nun, the Gemara says that the Beis Din Agadol Shabi Yerushalayim used to send out Shluchei Beis Din in order to fix all the roads and the bridges and all the potholes and all the damage that had occurred to the roads over the winter. You had a winter season, you had heavy rains, and the roads probably were not tarmacked in those days, and there were roads that there were holes in the road, and there were bridges that were broken, and there were trees that had fallen down into the road, etc. And therefore the Shluchei Beis Din used to send out teams of road builders, teams of people to fix the road. They used to ask, they used to advertise and ask for volunteers to help with fixing of the roads. But presumably there were professional teams as well and they needed materials. I'm not quite sure when it says that the Beis Din in Yerushalayim was responsible for all the roads in the whole of the country, where Beis Din Shabi Yerushalayim got the money from. Where were the funds from in order to fix the roads? I don't know. I should know, but I didn't look it up, and I'm not sure where I would look it up. But somehow this was the job for the moment. For the second half of Adar, the job was to fix the roads so that the Oile Regolim would be able to travel on the roads, and also that they would have wells at the side of the road so that they could. It was hot; it was really starting to get warm by then, and they would need water to drink in any event. And therefore, all the wells that had become contaminated or the wells that had collapsed during the winter, they would all get fixed. Zok the Gemara in Bava Kamma Daf Nun. Maisoi, Maase, Bevitoi Shel Nechunya Choyfashichin. There was a guy called Nechunya, Choyfashichin is the ditch digger. Right? The person who, he was an expert in digging ditches. And yeah, he was an expert road builder, but he was a volunteer. He was doing it at the Shem Mitzvah. Yeah? And it says, it's Al Shem Shechofa Be'eris Maim Lo'ele Regolim, because he used to dig the wells for the Oile Regolim. That's why they called him Nechunya Chofa Shechin. Shanofla Lebor Godol. Yeah? That his daughter fell into a pit. His daughter fell into a well, and she was in danger of drowning. And it seems like it would take, for an hour she could survive, but more than an hour gets dangerous, and after 3 hours she got no chances whatsoever. And she's down in this deep pit. Rabbi Chanina Bedoysa, who was the Tzadik Hador at the time, he was Melumad Benissim, so they came and told him that the daughter of Nechunya Chofashichin has fallen into a pit and she's in danger of drowning. Shor Rishoyna, for the first hour, Omar Lahem, he said, Shalom, don't worry. Because it says that the understanding of the Gemara is that for the first hour, a normal human being could survive in the pit. Yeah, so therefore he said, don't worry, she'll be okay. Shenis Omar Lahem, and in the second hour, he said to them, Shalom, it's okay. Shlishis, the third hour, where she would not normally have been able to survive, Omar Lahem, he said, also min amayim. Chanina Bedoysa said she's already out, she's safe. Now, Omer lo, mihel. Chodetaka went and they found her, and she was out of the pit, and she was standing at the side, or whatever it was, sitting at the side. And they said to her, who took you out? Omer lahem, she said to them, Zohar shel rechelim, that I saw a male ram, nizdamenli, v'zokein echod manhigoi. A ram came and schlepped me out of the pit, and Zocha Echod Manhigoi. And they understand, the Mefarshim say, that the ram is Eloi Shel Yitzchok, and the Zokin who was leading the ram was Avraham Avinu, and that they had come and they had asked, that they had come and they had rescued the daughter of Nechunya Chofashichin from the pit. So Omru Loi, so they said to him, to Rav Chanina Bedoysa, how did you know? Are you a Novi? Yeah, they said, Novi ato, Omalahem, he said, Loi Novi Onoichi, I'm not a Novi, Veloi Ben Novi Onoichi, Alekach Amati, I said, Dovo Sheoise Tzadik Mitztai Boy, the man who is digging the pits in order to help the Oile Regolim, as a volunteer is doing a Lashem Mitzvah, it's not Shaykh that his children or a child of his should have to suffer from that very thing, from a pit. Right? A pit of water is not going to be able to have any koyach. There's another story in the Gemara which we'll look at tomorrow. And you?
Saturday, Treway, North West London, Sunday, Kaf Bov Ador, 15th of March. Rabbi Shlomi Wise, Shlita, Rabbinic Coordinator of KLBD. Practical Halachos for Pesach. This week's share is in this March. Our esteemed founder, of Yosef Doben, of Shem Rechol Tzvi, Itzkovitz, Zichrono Livracha.
I got asked to speak, and I always start off with the disclaimer that go and ask your own Pesach for practical halachos, because they've won, as I mentioned, I gave a share also last minute yesterday, and I said to people that, as I've said here in the past, that you really do need to know Dalaf Nehmiyata Omet, because unfortunately not everyone who's learnt one area of Shulchan Aruch has learnt all of Shulchan Aruch. Okay, so we've already discussed many things about food, and we could go into Ha'agolas Kalim, but I think nowadays most people don't really do a lot of Ha'agolas Kalim. People don't really kasher their Kalim. A lot of people use disposables, and we spoke about disposables last year, about how disposables don't need a Hechsher for Pesach. They actually... Haggadah's Kalim, interestingly enough, comes up mostly in Kashrus, rather than Kashrus around the year. But then it's much more complex because you're dealing often with huge vats. I once went to a place in Italy to have to kasher a vat, and it was 1,000,000 liters. And when you talk about 1,000,000 liters, it's a few stories tall, and there's no way to actually heat up the silo. It doesn't have a heating element or anything like that, and it gets very complicated with these things. We had to pump in steam under with pressure, which went above 100 degrees because of the pressure, and it had to be pumped pretty much the entire day, and it was a very long and difficult process. Baruch Hashem, there is a Magen Avraham. I don't recall the simon, but the Magen Avraham actually says that if one can use new kalim for Pesach, it would be better. I think nowadays most people have new kalim for Pesach if they're cooking at home. People go away now also. There's a lot of Pesach hotels and Pesach arrangements. And I would suggest, if anything, possibly the hardest thing to give Hersha on is a Pesach hotel. And I would also say to anyone who's thinking of going away, buyer beware. There is a certain person who gives hashem to hotels who has a very poor reputation, and the tzibur out there don't know. There is a genuine worry with these things. This person was almost bragging that he had, one year, 12 hotels under his hashgacha in different countries. And I would say that anyone would be scared to have one hotel under the hashgacha. Ask anyone who's been in Kashrus for many years in a senior position, they will tell you that mostly Hashgachas make a loss on these things. It's that bad. Very often there are fights between the Heksha and the person arranging the things. They don't want to pay for Mashkichim, they don't want to pay for as little as possible. And in cases where you have a good Heksha and they actually do put in enough mashkichim and around the clock, I mean, then you see the fee matches that. You'll see that a good heksha for a hotel anywhere will be astronomical in terms of the fees, and there's a reason for it. Unlike around the year kashrus, which is hard enough, with Pesach, even in regular foods, in processed foods, you can easily find many items that are chametz. And they don't look like chametz. When you read the word, you don't even know it's some sort of acid or some sort of ingredient. You don't necessarily know how it's made. It's very often fermented and then chametz. So that's just a small by way of starting off. I won't talk about Haggadah Kelim, but if one does do Haggadah Kelim, it's interesting that if you take your pot to the local place where they're boiling up vats of water, it should be straightforward enough if you've cleaned it well. One of the issues can be handles and lids, which have extra chumras and can be an issue. One of the things that we recently was discussed are various types of ovens. And self-cleaning ovens, one should be aware, don't necessarily have the necessary functions to kasher for Pesach. It's something called a paralytic oven, which if it is working and functioning properly, and if you use the right settings, gets to a very high temperature, like 500 degrees, and that would be considered possibly libun, at least libun kal. And as I say, it's possible to use that for an oven because today you don't typically bake on the ovens or cook on the oven walls. It's only boilea through steam. The door of these paralytic ovens doesn't get to the same temperature as the walls where the elements are. But again, because it's boilea only through steam, you don't actually cook on them, you can kasher them. Things that are more difficult to kasher are trays or tins, which pretty much need libun chomer. So in a case where someone wants to use an oven for Pesach, one's used for the year, besides having to go through the cleaning process and the kashering process, it's advisable not to bake directly on the trays and preferably actually cover them some sort of silver foil or something throughout Pesach, even after you've tried to kasher them with as high a temperature as possible. Okay, that's a little bit on Haggadah. As I say, when it comes to the actual pots and pans and things like that, generally people buy new nowadays. There is a sugya which I'm not really prepared for properly, but I thought it was an interesting sugya because it has many things that it affects and can come out, and ramifications that can come out from it. And that is, there's a shaila about milk on Pesach, right? So if you have a cow that is eating chametz, may you take the milk from that cow? Now I don't know, because I haven't been in touch with them, but I think the milk companies here in England generally, I think, don't do milking on Pesach. I don't know. Where this becomes even more problematic, as you can imagine, is in Eretz Yisrael. But in Eretz Yisrael, there is a little bit more control in terms of what you can feed the cows. This is based on a sugya, somewhat of Zev Zegor.
Cows eat hay, don't they?
Sorry?
Cows don't eat hay.
So they don't really eat that. In certain countries, you'll see sometimes on things like butter, you'll say grass-fed. So you will see, I think, somewhere in Ireland and in Switzerland, where there are cows who have been given that. But very often, not always, very often, it's much cheaper to give them grain. And the grain could be chametz. Well, we'll discuss exactly some of the points in this. So, so that's very good. So I remember probably the first place by chance that I came across this when I was younger, before I even learnt Issa Veheta, I think was there's a Ramah in the last siman in Hilchos Treifos, siman Samach. There it's talking about really an animal that ate something poisonous, but the Ramah adds in Hagav behema shenispatma b'dvarim asurim. So an animal that became big, grew from things which are not allowed. Muteres avol im lo nispatma kol yomer rak b'dvarim asurim asura. If this cow, all it's eaten pretty much all its life is things which are osur, you're not allowed to eat the cow. The cow is now, in essence, a trefa cow. This is learnt basically from a Tosfos in Tumura. The Gemara talks about behema tohirish yonkam in a trefa. So you have a cow that's, let's say, drinking pig's milk instead of cow's milk. And there, again, this is also Sugya, and we're going to go through maybe a couple other Gemaras. In short, it doesn't have to be that literally the only thing it ate was non-kosher. It's enough that its mainstay, it's you know, Rashi talks about from chakras to chakras. So if it could survive with what it's eating from this non-kosher source, and it would survive on that, even if it's somewhat being bolstered by other food, that's awesome. Now, the Achronim, the Ramah doesn't make a difference between what kind of issur it is. Ramah just says, Dvarim Asurim. The Shach, the Pri Chodosh, and others disagree with the Ramah, and they say that it's specifically when it's Issa Hanon. It's not Issa Achila. That makes a huge difference, because if it were to be, as we say, non-kosher milk, let's say a pig's milk or something like that, or it would be, another example is toloim. If you were to give protein, companies are using insects for protein, things like that. And if it would be issa achila, they argue that this is bichlal not comparable. Therefore, it would be allowed. Some of the sugars we've seen in the Gemara, the sugars in Avodah Zarah, where a behemoth may have eaten orla. Orla is fruits that haven't grown, the tree hasn't grown 3 years, and orla is osabahana, or from Avodah Zarah. So kashina Avodah Zarah, things like that, various vegetables that belong to Avodah Zarah. And those would be the ones that are os. The Beis Hillel goes further and argues bichlal, he questions the whole thing, and he says this, the Mishnah in Temura is Reb Chanina ben Antignus, and according to the if you look there in the Bar Tanura and also the Rambam, they don't paskin like Reb Chanina ben Antignus. So he actually says that this doesn't go according to the opinion Zev Zer Goyim is Mutter, it goes according to the opinion Zev Zer Goyim is Osa, and therefore he questions Bechlal the whole halacha. But this generally is taken on. So that therefore an animal, in theory, that you had grown by eating treif, let's call it Issa Hano, then that would be an issue. And therefore you can imagine this straight away leads us to the question of chomets, because chomets is not just osa ba'achila, chomets is osa ba'ano. You can have benefit from chomets. Just to, before I'll skip the Gemara of Azara, the Gemara of Azara basically is mem chesam and base onto mem tes. There we say there's an inyan of zev zegoyim. We paskin zev zegoyim is mutter. So let me explain what zev zegoyim is. If you have, one example is maybe not the best example of the Gemara. One of the Gemara's examples is if you had two bits of yeast, and you wanted to make bread, and they both fell in. One was osur, one was mutter. And each one doesn't by itself have enough power to ferment your dough and start making it rise. But if together, right, there's a machlokas rezim and chom, but we paskin that since this and this are goyim, they cause the fermentation, it's mutter. Right? And the Ramah, who's being machme, is only when, as I say, the vast majority, let's call it the vast majority or the mainstay of this, of what is causing the item to grow is us. If it would be 50-50, it doesn't have to be literally 50-50, 60-40. If it's Zev Zer Goyrim, then generally that would be mutter. So if you have a cow who's only eating chomets, then you'd have a problem. If the cow has a little bit of chomets here and there, that wouldn't be an issue. So if you have a mixture of items, right, part of it is grain, then the choyer, that would be okay. But as I say, the question is when it's got chomets. There are two questions. There is a question of before Pesach, and there's a question of on Pesach. So before Pesach, there's a little bit more room to be makel, because again, unless this first of all is a machlokas whether where you say shmoy olav, meaning do we count chomets as issa before the time of Pesach? This has many ramifications in halacha, especially to do with kashering and other things, but how do we look at this? And to do with bittul, right? So if you have, are you allowed to be mevatel chomets before Pesach, b'shishim? So if you say, well, you know, I know this is Chometz and I know why I'm doing it right now, even though, yes, right now it's not Osir, it's not Pesach, but I'm doing it on purpose, that could be a problem. Whereas if you say, look, right now it's Chanukah time, and right now there's no issue, so are you allowed to be Mevatel it in Shishim at that time? Sorry? So is that called Issa? It's an interesting question, because when you have an example of Basar B'Cholov, one would argue that Basar, meat, is, unless it's kosher meat, it's got good Heksher, it's been everything wants well, and you've got Cholov, which has also got a great Heksher. Each item there is actually Heter. They're not Issa, you call it Issa Heter, it's under the Hilchos of Heter. And Rabbi Kivayeg and others explain that doesn't help, that each one of those is mutter. You can't take a drop of milk and put it in your cholent, regardless of the fact that each one is mutter by itself. So you can have a concept of sort of even if the item isn't actually mutter per se. Okay, so going a bit forward, I'm not going to tackle all the cases of a yid. If you've got a yid who's owning a farm, hopefully they will arrange things. It's much more difficult. Obviously, you need to, the question, do you need to sell the farm? How do you do it? Do you do a shutfus with a goy? It's very much more complicated, because if you are owning the animals, and the Mishnah Berurah and others bring down that was the minhag. You used to sell the animal, and you'd sell it quite a bit before Pesach already, and you have a whole complicated series of halachas there, because in essence, you're being ne'er nefer chometz. The fact that the goy is feeding your cow chometz on Pesach, if that's what it's feeding it, that is a problem. It doesn't matter the fact that, you know, you've sold it to him or whatever. You know that you're going to get it back, depending on what the arrangement is. This does come up a little bit in practical terms. I always say to people that it's not always advisable to have pets, because very often pet food has chometz in it. It doesn't have to, and it does depend on what you're feeding it. So a cat can get by very easily with bits of meat and chicken and whatever, but other animals such as rabbits and others, very often they don't live on that type of thing, and they need chometz ideally, and fish as well sometimes, other such pets. So there are issues to do with Shabbos, handling pets on Shabbos. It's very questionable. Pashas, you're not allowed to handle animals on Shabbos, even if it's a pet. It's not clear that Chazal had the concept of a pet, right? You know, not a pet cow or a pet dog in those days, but there is this question. And besides the regular Shabbos question, you've also got the problem when it comes to Chazal. Giving it to I forgot what they call it now, but not den. You're giving it to a vet or some sort of agency to take care of your pet. May or may not be an answer, depending on what you're expecting them to give it. There are questions: do you own the chot? Do you have to pay for their feed? Because always it's just a lump sum. And maybe if you do it far enough before Pesach, is that enough? And people generally don't like to give away their pets for a couple of weeks anyway. And these are, as I say, complicated problems. But this is nogea to here. So if we stick with just when a goy is the owner of the cow, or the goy is doing the milking, the question then becomes, if you know, and again, today maybe it would be easier, but if you know that it's giving it oats, and it's giving it chometz, that would be a question. One of the questions really is also, it's a fair question, we're choshesh today that, we're choshesh for grain being chometz. Right. In the days of the Rishonim and earlier, the Shulchan Aruch talks about even what happens if someone is stuck on Pesach and doesn't have matzah. So they don't have any matzah, they certainly don't have any shmura, they have mishas ktsira, they don't have shmura, mishas techino or lisho or anything. So the Shulchan Aruch paskens, you can take kemach min ashok. You can go out and buy flour and make your own matzahs on Pesach. Already in the Magen Avraham and early Achronim, they point out that the wheat that you could buy nowadays has been conditioned. It's already been washed. And therefore, we have to be choshesh, to worry that there's been a sort of a first stage of sprouting. And therefore, grain as grain, or then later flour, is considered chometz. And therefore, not only are you not allowed to go out and buy flour on the marketplace and make your own matzahs, but you're not allowed to keep flour. You have to assume flour in your cupboard is actually chometz. You have to get rid of it. So since this is only a chashash, and in the case where you don't know that this has been, so very often animal feed, right, if you're having grain, it isn't necessarily treated in the same way, because it's they actually have, for example, barley, different types of barley. Some are grown for animal feed. So it may be the case that those grains are not actually chometz. So that's one svara l'hokel.
Where's the flour chometz?
So
it's from the natural grains.
So first of all, flour can be treated in all those sorts of ways. They add folic acid and various other minerals into it, for example, which are often in liquid form. There's the second, that water touches the grain, that is what causes the sprouting, the germination. That already we're worried about. The truth is, you can make a bread, it's called sprouted bread. You can make it by simply soaking grain, and as it starts to sprout, you mince it, and you bake it, and that's a bread already as it is. You don't even need to add yeast, you don't have to add anything. You can make a bread that way itself. There's actually a machlokes rishonim, how far do we take this? And the Rashba is machmir that he's worried even when it's b'shibolim. If you have wheat growing in the field, and the farmer's late to harvest it, and it's dry, it's starting to dry, you start to see the color change, it starts to dry, and it rains. So the Rashba says you've got to be choshesh that the rain, whilst it's still attached to the ground, has started to be machmits the grain. And you've got a problem to use that grain for Pesach now. It's machlokes rishonim, I think we are machme for the Rashba. I don't know how often this such a thing happens, Baruch Hashem. Well, in this country, you never know when it's going to rain, so maybe it's more of an issue. But when you have, I believe tomorrow, the sugya, to be told, is matzah, machine matzahs and things like that. And any hechsher, whether it's a machine matzahs or hand matzahs, the rabbonim go to the fields and supervise the harvesting, right from the very beginning. Generally speaking, as I say, there is a, I've said here before in the past, I think there's a machlokes rishonim about how far do you need in Shas Ketirah. So, yeah, we're generally machmeh, certainly for the Sidorim, certainly, that's from Shas Ketirah. And so that's how far it goes back. Okay, I've almost run out of time, so I'll just quickly say that this sugya of milk on Pesach is a huge machlokes, and it's the Madani Shmuel has a very long list of Rishonim. It's almost like a shopping list. In a good way, he goes through and quotes you so many Maran Makomas and so many different people. The Shari Tshuva is one of the people that's quoted. The Shari Tshuva has a sefer. Shari Tshuva on the Shulchan Aruch has a sefer Beis Ephraim, and he writes at length to Bimate, and he says that the fact that the Zevezeh Goyim is only when there's something be'en, something we see in front of us. But here, the milk is too far removed from the chometz, and the chometz is long gone, and it's not a problem. However, as I say, this is a very big machlokas back and forth, and the question is more on Pesach itself. The Magen Avraham in Tof Mem Hei, Seif Hei, is machmir for Zevezeh Goyim of chometz, even b'mashu, because chometz is on Pesach, is also b'mashu. Even it's not bottled in anything, you're in a million. Therefore, he's machmeh on such a thing, and therefore, milking the cow on Pesach would, according to the Svara of the Magen Avraham, seem to be a problem. In Prague, Rav David Oppenheimer and the Tshuva Ma'abar, Rav Lezer Fleckes, and others were very machmeh for this, and they told people not to have the milk on Pesach. And this was a very big machlokas achronim. I saw for the Litvaks, one of the sources I didn't see quoted, but I remember seeing years ago, is the Meister Rav. They bring B'Shem the Vilna Gaon that he was not machmir for this. It goes into a whole sugya of Issa and Tuma and how you understand. Okay, it's a bit too long to go into, but he says you're allowed to go and milk a cow on Pesach of a goy, even if the goyim feed it chometz. That was his opinion, and Rav Chaim Volozhin also agrees. And as I say, this is brought down. The Mishnah Berurah brings halach lamaisa to be machmeh, and if possible, be machmeh at the very least me'es le'es. You should milk it after 24-hour period of not feeding it chometz. And as I say, these are things where there's a big machlokas. One of the strange applications of Zevezeh Goyim, one of the things that one wouldn't expect to see bichlal, is a tshuva. Really, it's a tshuva of Rabbi Yosef Shaul Natanzin, Shaul Meshiv. But I saw it. I didn't see it in his tshuvas tend to be rather lengthy. If you look at the set, it's a huge set. And every time, I mean, the Shaul Meshiv is It's an amazing sefer, but you have to be holding in shas, as he was. And he had questions from all over the world. He was one of the main poskim of his day in Galicia, and he had questions. This question actually came from America. That's how far they were sending questions from. But it's there's a tshuva in the Minchas Eloza, in the Likutim. So this is not the main in the old set, but it's in the Likutim there in Simon Lamed Dalet. And he's asked about benzene, right? About petrol. And the rule of the Medina was that they made a rule that you'd have to add 20%. It calls it spirit. So I think it means ethanol. And actually, it's interesting that today we have this in this country. If you go to fill up your car with petrol, most of the time, it's got E10. And 10% is now ethanol. And it's interesting that this is a rule that people think it's a new thing. Actually, when petrol was first made, this was, as you see, from years ago, this was the rule. Ethanol is not as efficient as the petrol. It's a little bit less efficient, but it does also burn. And the question, his question was, now, what's the din? Can you be nene? Can you drive a car on Pesach? Because you're driving around, you're burning your neft, your petrol, your petroleum, which is not chametzik, but you've also got, yeah, do you say chos v'deh? I'm like, well, what's the whole thing? So ethanol,
it's made from grain,
so one of the questions will be, what is the ethanol made from? So generally speaking, the ethanol, you use the word alcohol, it's very broad, but ethanol is usually fermented from a carbohydrate, and it's in France, it's very often from wheat or sugar. In this country also, we get a lot from import from the continent, but we also get here, and it can be sugar. So this is one of the stodden to be mate is the fact that it's the meat. The meat is wheat. There is maybe 20%, 30% of the market is wheat, but you can get from other sources. Baruch Hashem, for them, the lucky Americans, in certain things have a lot easier time when it comes to Pesach. In other things, in Yoshan and Chodosh, they have a much harder time than us. But when it comes to general Pesach things, their alcohol and their vinegar and other items are generally kitnius rather than chometz. And I don't think anyone would be machmeh about driving around your car with kitnius inside. That would be... Oh, so the question becomes, and this is the main argument of the Minchas Eloza, to be mate, that because it's already nifsal machilas kelev before Pesach, he then talks about how someone showed him how one could separate out the ethanol with, I suppose, distillation, and is that now, and he says that there wasn't a smell or a taste of the petroleum, and is that a problem? Rav Moshe has a truth about this, the Chazoy Nochum, which was Rav Nochum Wittenfeld, which was, I think, the brother of the Chabina Rov, has a tshuva where he's machme for certain perfumes. I didn't see it inside, I saw a quote with the Osameach, there's a volume published much later that of his tshuvas where he's also machme. There is a question about perfumes and cosmetics. Do we have to be choshesh if there's any chometz ethanol that you could, in theory, distill it out? I understand from, I've heard, B'Shem Dr. Rosenfeld's chemist, that they've now made a system where they've sort of locked in. When you denature alcohol, right, because you don't want people to drink it for whatever reason, using it in perfumes, whatever, and it doesn't have the usual tax code because it's not an edible item, they've now found a clever way to stop people distilling it out. You have to know the order of things. I'm not fully sure how this works, but in the days Pashtus, when this was a problem, when you could distill it out, would this be a problem? So there's a long truth. It's interesting that the Sholomesha was Machmeh. He was talking about some sort of kerosene or some sort of lamp where they had a mixture of items, some were chametz and some not. And he's Machmeh not to use this as lighting. You couldn't burn this on Pesach because he holds that Zev Zeh Goyren is applicable here. And it's even in Hanah, you can't have benefit from chametz. And you don't say, and Zev Zeh Goyren on Pesach, we don't say bittul. So Sholomesha was actually Machmeh. On this point, and the Minchas Eloza disagrees, and he brings also Shuvas Minchas Moshe from Moshe Nochum Rushamsky, who he also allowed it. He says this case is maybe better that it's totally nifsal, and no one would want to have this. And even if you were to distill it out, not everyone would drink it. There is actually a question about this point, about whether this chumrah of not having hanor of chometz on Pesach, bittel on Pesach, does it extend as far as hanor? So in other words, we know that you can't, if chometz falls into your food on Pesach, even in a tiny amount, it's not bottled on Pesach. Is it, obviously we know you're not allowed to eat it on Pesach, but are you allowed to have hanor if it's a small amount? This is a machlokes rishonim, and the Ravid, the Torah's Ravid, who is Mati, says that you're not allowed to eat it, but hanor, that far, we don't apply the stringency to hanor. That would be another tzad to be mekel here. But in general, you have to be mitzaref a number of items. Number one, that the ethanol, chometz ethanol, is the minority on the market. And the fact that it's pashtus nifsal mechesker for Pesach. The fact that on Pesach as well, there is a tzad to say one can have hanor when there is a bittel of sorts. And we don't say chayz v'nei on that. And in general, I haven't seen people asking the question recently, but this actually now becomes a question of various things. The same thing would apply to certain other chemicals, but I've run out of time, so we'll leave it there. Shkai.
We're not worried about a cow eating treif, are we? So why are we worrying about a cow eating hummus? They've got no... A cow can eat chaza treif. We don't think about treif.
So the Ramah says, if that's in the